Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD, the Mary Griffith Show underway, brought to you by Refreshment Services Pepsi and Harvest Ridge Coffee. And we're enjoying that this morning, even though I spilled it all over my studio. And once again, you're not allowed to have liquids in the studio, but of course we always do because I'm not going to go without my cup of Harvest Ridge Coffee. We've got a new face on the Mary Griffith Show this morning. Heather Bangert joins us from the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Welcome, Heather.
Hi there, thanks.
So glad to have you here. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What's your involvement with the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County?
Well, I work at the museum across the street doing as the staff as part of the gift shop.
Okay.
But I've also been doing research on early Quincy, and specifically the anti-slavery movement, which was very, very important in this town.
Yes, abolitionist rule as far as
Definitely.
Quincy is concerned. So, well, we're glad to have you on board, and we'll talk a little bit more about the gift shop because there's so many great items there. But first, let's put on your historian hat.
Sure.
You have done a lot of research about the anti-slavery movement, mm-hmm. about New Philadelphia, Illinois, which is now our latest national park, and also about the Emma Coger family. So I don't know much about any of this, so I'm just going to let you take it away. What have you found?
Sure, I'll talk a little bit about the Coger family. Cynthia Coger was the matriarch of that family. Emma was her youngest daughter. But I'll tell you a little bit about Cynthia Coger's life. She was born into chattel slavery in Kentucky, and at some point she moved to Palmyra, Missouri at age 8, was there about 30 years, and had 3 children with David Coger there, and he may have been enslaved at one time, too. At some point, either through a manumission or some freeing tactic, she moved to Quincy in 1850. And this was 1850s in Quincy was a pretty dramatic time, not just here, but the entire nation, with events leading up to the Civil War. Her husband, David, died, and she became involved in a common law, quote-unquote, marriage to a Preston Lane in Palmyra, Missouri. He maintained his residence there. He was a white man.
Well, that was controversial,
yeah,
right there.
And they had 3 children together.
Wow.
For sure. Yeah, and this is the 1850s. When she moved to Quincy, she she opened a boarding house, and she lived about 1 block away from here, about 3rd and Main, between Hampshire and Main. And just a few blocks away from the Clark family from New Philadelphia. They also moved here in the 1850s. Cynthia was a founding member of the Jersey Street Baptist Church, which is on about 8th and Jersey. It eventually became the current First Baptist Church at 8th and Elm Street. Let's see. One of her daughters, Lucy Ann, moved to Quincy in the 1850s also and married Monroe Clark of New Philadelphia. Now, this is important because the entire Clark family moved here, and a couple of the brothers worked for John Van Dorn, a known abolitionist who was helping escaping slaves from Missouri. And that was a very big connection to the Underground Railroad. His brother Simeon Clark also worked for John Van Dorn, and they had known Free Frank McWhorter, the founder of New Philadelphia, for a very long time. Their sister married Free Frank's son, actually, Squire.
Wow.
Yeah, so they were pretty close, obviously. And they all lived on 3rd Street, just a few blocks from each other. Yeah, and like I said, the 1850s was a pretty dramatic time in Quincy, and the so-called Underground Railroad, which is the secret route to Canada and northern states, was really heating up at that time after the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850.
Let's talk a little bit about that, because
sure.
I just got back from Canada, and believe it or not, in St. Catharines, Ontario, I went to Harriet Tubman's church, and we learned a lot about Harriet Tubman and her later life, mm-hmm. after the Underground Railroad. But that Fugitive Slave Act, it basically gave people permission to go up into free states and capture black people,
yes.
and return them to slavery. And frankly, even free blacks were,
mm-hmm.
afraid.
Yes.
And so the Underground Railroad really had to get people into Canada then, because it wasn't just, mm-hmm. safe to go to New York or Wisconsin. then the route had to end in Canada. And indeed, right. Harriet Tubman's route was the eastern route. Our route, of course, led into the middle of Canada. But fascinating to hear how the Underground Railroad always existed. But once you got across the Ohio River, you could kind of make it then, you know, a little bit on your own. But once that Fugitive Slave Act went into effect, right. any person who was black of color could be captured anywhere in the United States and returned to a slave state mm-hmm. and sold into slavery. So it really ramped up the Underground Railroad and definitely made Quincy a hotspot for the secret passage.
And there were even students from Quincy who moved to Canada and opened a fugitive slave school. So, yeah, we were very involved, very involved.
We were involved on all ends, all aspects of the Underground Railroad, from here in the middle of it to the end point. And so continue with your story. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Heather,
no problem.
But I think a lot of people don't know what that Fugitive Slave Act
sure,
is.
Sure, sure.
And that really was the big change when people who had been, black people who had been in the North that felt they were safe, suddenly didn't feel safe anymore.
Yes, and I forgot what I was going to say. Technically, Northern residents were required by law to return
Right.
escaping slaves back to the owners. But that angered a lot of freedom-loving Americans big time. So the Underground Railroad became even more organized. And the free black people involved with that were very, very key to making it successful, because especially the Clark family from New Philadelphia, they had known the secret route to Canada since the 1820s. And they were very instrumental in making it all work, that's for sure. I'll talk a little bit about two more of Cynthia's daughters. One daughter, Zenobia, she attended Oberlin College in Ohio, actually, during the Civil War. And this school was known for its Underground Railroad activity, too. And they were admitting women and black people as early as 1835. That's pretty...
Yeah, Oberlin is one of those...
Yes.
Yeah, they were the leaders. They were the trailblazers
definitely.
Came to women's rights and black people's rights.
And then... Cynthia Coger and her husband, Preston Lane, her common-law husband, their youngest daughter was Emma, and she was born in 1853. She's also known as Emma Lane Coger. And in 1872, when she was a teacher at Lincoln School here in Quincy, she sued a steamboat company in Iowa for, the official charges were assault and battery, but it was fueled over racial discrimination when she was removed from the dining table because some nosy white lady objected to her dining there. And eventually the case, she secured a lawyer in Keokuk, Iowa, and eventually the case went to the Iowa Supreme Court, and she won. She won at 20 years old. So that's a...
And what year was that?
1872.
Yeah, so after the Civil War, but of mm-hmm. course... Segregation
yes.
then set in.
And Civil War was so recent that it was still pretty
hostile.
Yeah.
I mean, the Civil War didn't... Listen, they never really solve any of our problems. They just push them into a different venue. So, and there's been some recognition of Emma Coger through the Historical Society.
Yes, recently there was a marker dedicated to her at Woodland Cemetery, and both Cynthia and Emma are buried there, but Emma had an unmarked grave until very recently, last month.
I applaud the Quincy Historical Society, the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. You have put up these memorial placards at several grave sites.
Mm-hmm.
There's one in the Jewish Cemetery. There's several at Woodland Cemetery. Some of these people do have unmarked graves, and thank you for doing that, because it's a really critical, important part of our history and definitely something that we need to know more about. It was so interesting to hear this lady from Ontario, Canada, talk about Harriet Tubman. Harriet Tubman, that church still stands and is still in existence, and she is a continual descendant. She's a sixth generation of people that have gone to that church, and she talks a little bit about how, you know, even in Canada, where black people were free, they weren't necessarily beloved. There was still a black part of town. There was still segregation mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And oftentimes, there was a lot of effort to capture people and return them to the States, even if it was possible. So that's an interesting part of our history. And we can learn all about that at the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Thank you for doing that research.
Yeah, no problem.
And that is
fantastic.
Research
is ongoing, and
yeah.
Everybody else jump in.
If you know anything, jump on in. Next year's our 200-year anniversary.
Right.
Well, we'll turn our attention now to Lynn Snyder. Lynn is going to tell us a little bit about the John Anderson Film Festival. Of course, Tim Jacobs, Dr. Tim Jacobs, is the key dog on this sled, I think we'll say. But Tim couldn't be here today. So the John Anderson Film Festival is going to be held on Sunday, August 11th and on Sunday, August 25th. And I love the theme, from Gunsmoke to MacGyver, because John Anderson has been in more things than you can shake a stick at, I guess. And Lynn, I know you're not a John Anderson specialist, but what can you tell us about the film festival, please?
I am not a John Anderson specialist, and Tim is sorry that he couldn't be here today, but he's at a conference in St. Louis, so I'm filling in. So if I say anything that's not exactly accurate, I'm sure he'll let me know.
He may be listening.
Right. The festival is on August 11th and August 25th. And you're right, the August 11th is From Gunsmoke to MacGyver. I definitely saw Gunsmoke when I was a kid. I don't remember MacGyver, so we originally only got two TV stations, and MacGyver must have been on a third, because I don't ever remember seeing it. I don't know, the movies are Hallelujah Trail, and it says, the Tim's notes say, it will focus on his only comedic movie role. So that's what I know about Hallelujah
right.
Trail.
He mostly played, like, he was in Bonanza a lot.
Yeah.
He always played the Western guy. He
right.
always played the older guy in the Westerns. And then he started becoming, like, on the Perry Masons and the MacGyvers, which was a show where this guy was always getting into, you know, kind of like Mission Impossible, getting out of
I did see that.
You probably did. It was on much later. His career spanned a long time, and when he was very old,
mm-hmm.
he was still doing character acting, so John Anderson. Now, is it 2 o'clock? It's at the
yes,
Senior Center.
It's at the Senior Center, 2 o'clock.
It's at the Senior
2
Center at 2 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
both times.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
free
and
open.
Charge.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to the Hallelujah Trail, which is one of his only comedic roles, we've also, they found this movie, The House Divided.
Yes, I did want to tell you about that,
because
that's an interesting story.
Because I may have been in this. I can't remember. I was in some John Anderson movie, and it filmed right here in Quincy.
Likely that was it. Yeah. Actually, Tim and Barb Rowell, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, from Quincy Community Theater, were looking for this film, A House Divided. It was made here in Quincy. I don't think it had a wide distribution, or at least it wasn't widely shown over a long period of time, and it had disappeared.
It was a flop, in other words.
Well, I won't say that. I wouldn't say that about anything from Quincy. It was filmed here in Quincy. The mansion is in it. The John Wood Mansion is in it. And Quincyans were in it, and they finally found, and I will read this so that I get it right, discovered at the University of Maryland, but in a beta format they found it, and they converted it to VHS and then into a DVD. And I will say that when I was first coming to the Historical Society volunteering, I found in the gift shop a DVD, and it said A House Divided, and there was a picture on the front of it, and I recognized it. It was a face I recognized, and it was John Anderson. I will tell you that it's not, at least that one was not the best copy in the world. I think it's lucky that they found anything at all, but it clearly had gone through several iterations to get to where it was as a DVD, and I'm not sure whether that's the version they're going to be showing, but
it's hard to say. I think they did show it once, or at least a portion of it once, previously in Quincy at the Quincy Community Theater.
Right.
And Barb Rao, bless her soul, now she's passed. But, you know, these are the kind of things that, you know, not every movie that is made is a success. And so, but this still is a wonderful talk about John Anderson from Quincy. And I remember we shot it, the scene in South Park.
How can anyone from Quincy resist?
I mean,
how can you resist?
You've got to go.
I've
got to go see it. I didn't
exactly.
get to see it the last
exactly.
time. So if they're going to show any part of it, you know, and I don't care how bad it is, I'm going to look for myself in that crowd scene there at South Park because I was a little girl. And my parents were friends with John Anderson. And so that wasn't why I was in the movie. It was the open casting. It wasn't like I had a part in the movie. I mean, everybody was standing there. So I'll be interested to see, did I actually make the movie? Was there ever even a close-up of me, or was I just in the crowd scene? Could I pick myself out as a young girl? So John Anderson had a very, very big career. And everything is going to be free and open to the public. It's Sunday, August 11th is the first one. And that's going to talk a lot about his television career.
Right.
All of his bonanzas and Gunsmokes and Perry Masons. And, you know, I think he's been in so many stuff, and MacGyver and everything. And that's his television career where he really had the most success. But he had some film success, too. You can see him in the old Wild West channel. I just turned on yesterday, and he was on. He was playing a colonel in the Army sometime around, you know, post-Civil War. So that'll be Sunday, August 25th at 2 o'clock. And this has been moved to the Senior Center at 639 York because, number one, it's bigger, and number two, it's handicap accessible.
Yes.
Okay, but it's always free of charge. I do want to ask you one question, and it goes back to why it's at the Senior Center. I called the other day, and Susie DeClue told me that fundraising is going very, very well to get the new elevator operational across the street here at 4th and Main. Do you, either of you, have any insight into fundraising? Heather's shaking her head. Lynn is saying...
I can tell you that I am on a building oversight committee, so I'm looking at things like what kind of carpeting is put in and nuts and bolts. But and so the fundraising committee is a different entity.
Right, but they must be doing something if you're looking for carpeting.
They are. And I have to tell you that being a research nerd, I decided to look for the history of elevators in Quincy.
Oh, God.
So if you have a chance and you're looking for somebody to talk about an interesting topic, I can tell you about Mr. Hill, Thomas Hill, first came to Quincy and worked for a Gardner entity that turned into Gardner Denver. Okay. And he got several patents, and one of the patents that he got was for the elevator brake, I think it's called.
Okay.
And the elevator control something or other, and I've got it here. But the good thing about it was, for the early elevators, it's what froze the elevator in place if the electricity went out. So rather than it falling to the bottom of the building, this device froze the elevator wherever it was.
The emergency brake.
Yes. And then, of course, there's Mr. Hollister.
Oh, yeah.
Who came to Quincy in 1899, and he was joined by Mr. Whitney in 1906.
And, of course, we know about... Well, you'll come back and tell us
yes.
the whole story.
Yes.
Because Lynn Snyder has got a story about every single thing in the world. I still play...
Most of them are true.
I still love your story, and I still play it every once in a while about the beer bottles. They had to empty all the beer bottles to save the bottle when Prohibition came in.
Well, our Prohibition exhibit is still up, and will be up through the fall.
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, these ladies are going to stay with us for just a moment, and we're going to learn about the gift shop at the Historical Society. I think Heather's capable of talking about that. And we're also going to learn about the exhibits that are on right now, just a brief summary. And so we'll be right back. Don't forget the John Anderson Film Festival, Sunday, August 11th, Sunday, August 25th, both days, 2 o'clock, free of charge, the Quincy Senior Center. We'll head up to the Ursa Farmers Cooperative. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation with the Historical Society of Quincy in Adams County. We're back, Talk Radio 930 WTAD. My guests today are Heather Bangert and Lynn Snyder, who are with the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. And Heather, I'm always promoting that if you need a unique gift or something, you know, somebody that's moved out of town or somebody who has ties to Quincy in some way or somebody who visits here and they want a memorable, you know, memento of Quincy, get right up to that microphone and tell us what's available right across the street at 4th and Main at your Historical Society gift shop, please.
Sure. Well, we have a pretty good selection of vintage books available right now. And plus our local authors, we have a very diverse selection of that. And let's see, we also have several, a lot of clothing available. Cowtown t-shirt and a long sleeve that's been pretty popular. And we just got a bunch of copies of the Cowtown Cookbook, which is a compilation of original German recipes that we're promoting again in the 21st century.
Well, this morning, Brian Durante was here on the Mary Griffith Show, and he had on his Dick's beer shirt. So you know where he got that, at the Historical Society. So a lot of really interesting things. And because you don't have a big neon sign, and because you're in the old library building, I don't think a lot of people know that there is a gift shop in there. And so anything you want that has ties to Quincy. And when you talked about vintage books, you also talked about local authors. These may be people who have written contemporary tomes, have nothing to do with history. They're just people who have written books that are from here. So you're really trying to promote, because they will be the future history. Someday, 100 years from now, Lynn Snyder and I won't be here. But somebody will be doing this show, and they'll be talking about some famous author from Quincy who they're having a retrospective on their life when they were a great artist.
Be Lynn Snyder, or will it be Mary?
It won't be. Well, that's true. Which one of us will be the person that is most, I give my vote to Lynn. I think Lynn is going to be the one that most people remember 100 years from now as a great citizen of our community. So
I beg to differ.
Well, you can do that, but it's my show, so I get to win. You get to win because I get the final vote. So there's lots of great stuff over there at the museum. And for folks who, I watch people come here all the time. Every day, somebody's piling into the museum. It's a group of children, or it's a group of adults, or whatever. Don't roll your eyes. Those kids are great. I know. But local folks need to get down there. Lynn, if they walk in today at 4th and Main, what are they going to see?
Well, our main exhibit on the first floor is, first we start with early Quincy, and we talk about John Wood, our first settler. And believe me, John Wood was a pioneer, and he was a real adventurer, I'd say. So the story of John Wood is much more than just the guy who's out there on the plinth with the long beard and his hand on the wood. Our main exhibit after the early Quincy is Prohibition. And if you want good stories, Prohibition is the place to look, 1920 to 1933.
All the little secret hidden.
Yes. And I think you and I have talked before what is a blind pig or what is a blind tiger? And I won't say today, but you can find out if you come over.
That's right.
We talk about Lawbin. We talk about Elmore, who was both sheriff and police chief during the height of Prohibition. We talk about the federal court that was here and the gangs from St. Louis and the Heron Gang from Southern Illinois. And they were big time. They were dangerous. And they were, both of those trials took place here in Quincy, and not many people know that. And it was the gang from St. Louis that made the papers because they were out on bail during their trial, and while they were out on bail, it was in the height of Prohibition, and they visited some of the roadhouses outside of town. At 24th and State was one, and then also I think down at the bottom of 12th through 24th Street on Highway 57. So they made great friends. They, of course, bought around for the house.
Of course. They had a lot of money because they were criminals.
Yeah. Right. Well,
alleged. I'm sorry. The trial did not take place.
And we have a wonderful exhibit, and Heather would also, I think, echo this, on the Underground Railroad and Black communities here in Quincy, and really the importance of individuals who put themselves out there on both sides, either to take their, to have the courage to take their own freedom in their hands, or to help with that. And we do look beyond Quincy. We look to Mendon some of the routes.
We have to talk about that because, you know, you had to get here to Quincy from somewhere, and then you had to go on. It wasn't like you could make a 100-mile journey in a day.
Yes.
These people were walking, many in the cover of night,
right,
or they were in the a hay wagon with hay piled over them. So, you know, 5-mile journey would be a full day, you know, to get to the next station. So these stops were, there were several stops in Quincy, and you might go from house to house just in Quincy, making it 12 blocks. Might be all you could do.
One of the things that I've noticed in the literature is what there is of reports and letters and journals is it often didn't go exactly the way you thought it was going to go. So the flexibility of the routes was they weren't really routes, they were acquaintances. And you might start for one, and we have some great stories about that. You might start in one direction, and it became patently clear that you had to move in another direction.
Right.
Or you might have to back up and go again. So it really, it had to remain flexible and, of course, fairly discreet.
Well, when I was up in Canada and I had the chance to hear that Harriet Tubman expert speak, she said, you know, poor little Harriet Tubman, barely 5 feet tall and very, you know, scrawny kind of sickly kind of person in slavery all of her, you know, childhood. She said she carried a gun. And let me tell you, turning back was not an option, because if you turned back, they would beat you until you told them what the route of the Underground mm-hmm. Railroad was. They would ask who was helping you along the way. So she basically was an enforcer. If it going got tough and you were in a swamp or you were stuck in Quincy or you didn't know where you were going, whatever was happening along the Underground Railroad, turning back for her was not an option. She was willing to shoot you in order to save the secrecy of the route.
That's
tough. You know, that's a tough lady.
And that's a very important point, because in our, and at least the research that I've done, I'm much more familiar with the stations or the individuals who were helping. And to think in the mind of this person who's going someplace they've never been before, that is a very...
Oh, yeah. They had no idea where they were going. They were in peril at every mm-hmm. moment. And everybody helping along the railroad was in peril at every moment. It wouldn't have been an underground railroad if they could have done it on, you know, it's like everything else. Just like prohibition, just like whatever. Anytime you're involved in something that's illegal, it's got to be secretive, and keeping the secret is incredibly important. So everybody, yeah, keep going, because there's so much to see across the street.
I was going to say just briefly, on the second floor of our museum, excuse me, we have that wonderful collection of stained glass mm-hmm. that we inherited from the Gardner Museum. And that always, I love being at the desk at the bottom of the stairs and telling people, and they go upstairs, and almost invariably, and this is honestly true, I hear, oh, when they walk up, mm-hmm. and that makes me feel good.
Yes.
But we also have upstairs an interactive video that looks right out at you and the park, and it's a toggle back and forth, and it tells stories of some of the businesses and movie houses and restaurants and various institutions on the square. And then we also have, the kids have really gotten a lot of use out of this. We have an exhibit on the other, on the northwest side of the second floor, of Edward Everett watercolors of Quincy in the 1850s, the riverfront and some of the houses that he knew, including one that was very important on the Underground Railroad. And we have a jigsaw puzzle that was made for us that is one of the paintings that's on the wall. They're original watercolors. And this is blown up to like poster size. And kids really do have fun with it. And one of the things I often forget, and I honestly do forget, is to tell their parents that the picture is on the wall. So if they're having trouble putting it together, you can go around and look until you find, take your piece and look for it on the wall, and then you know where you are with the jigsaw puzzle.
You can cheat just a little
right.
bit if you know.
Right.
Well, and that's great. There's a whole other story, and we've told that on the Mary Griffith Show years past, how those paintings got
yes.
here. Somebody found those over just at a thrift store, I think in Springfield or something.
I think it was online.
Yeah,
it was,
you know,
online.
It was like, what? And they went over and looked at them, and they're mm-hmm. like, oh, man, we got to get this collection.
They are charming. They are beautiful as pieces of art. I'm in awe of what the man could do with watercolors. And they're also very interesting historically, because they show the railroad coming along the river. They show the river islands that are out there north and south of Quincy. And then, of course, he was painting the houses that he knew in the 1850s. So.
Well, it's fantastic. Folks, if you haven't caught on, there's an awful lot of great history in our area. And most of it is housed right here at the Historical Society of Quincy and Adams County. Their history museum is at 4th and Main. They also have the Governor John Wood Mansion and a visitor center there. So really, you can, you know, if you have people visiting from out of town and they have any interest in Lincoln, abolition, slavery, steamboats, railroads, I mean, you name it. And let's not forget, and I wasn't able to go on the trip up to Peoria, but our famous weather vane.
The weather vane
is up in Peoria at their
CB&Q station, yes.
So even pieces from Quincy have been exhibited in the Smithsonian. They're on loan to other museums across the United States. So get here right in our very own backyard and come and see what everything is about. When is the museum open?
It's open 10 to 4, Tuesday through Saturday. And I have to say, we will, within the next 2 years, be completely accessible, all floors, because of our project to put an elevator in. In 1888, they weren't thinking about elevators in buildings like museums,
no.
But we will have one soon. So all of those people who grew up with the public library and now would like to come back to this building that they love so much can easily climb those stairs that even I find them a little more intimidating than they were when I was 8 or 9 years old. So I just have to
have an elevator in there soon.
Yes.
Not soon enough, but if you make a contribution to the Historical Society, you can speed the plow along. It's been delightful. Anything I missed that you guys want to add? Heather?
No, I think it went pretty well.
You survived your first appearance. We hope it's the first of many. Thank you very much to Heather Bangert and always to Lynn Snyder, who's been almost a regular here on the show. We love it. And again, get out, and it is open, again, it's closed on Sundays and Mondays. It's open Tuesday through Saturday, the Historical Society Museum at 4th and Main, and mark your calendars for the John Anderson Film Festival, which is being shown August 11th, which is a Sunday afternoon at 2, and August 25th, which is a Sunday afternoon at 2, and because they want it to be handicap accessible and have a big crowd, that's at the Senior Center.
It is.
Fill that senior center. They can hold several hundred people. We want to see everybody there. Thank you, ladies, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll be back to do it all again tomorrow right here on The Mary Griffith Show. Stay tuned for Fox News.